I sniffed. "Thanks for the tip, Hog," I said, heading for the door. "I'd kick your ass for that if you weren't mustering out," he called after me. "Sure thing, sir." Chapter 4 Natasha followed me out to the parking lot and we climbed into her car. She was freaked out, and frankly so was I.
"What kind of crap have you gotten me into now, James?" she demanded.
"Don't worry, babe," I began.
"No, don't even go there. I don't want to hear any sweet-sounding talk about how everything's going to be fine. Turov, I always knew she was a cast-iron bitch and that she hated you, but something serious is up and I'm worried."
"Yeah," I said, making a forward spinning motion with one finger. She caught the meaning of my gesture and started the car. We lifted up and glided out onto the road. The conversation lagged as we both fell to brooding. I watched the streets whiz by out my passenger window. There were signs of Earth's newfound wealth everywhere. Atlanta's roads had all been dilapidated a year or two back. Now the weeds had been replaced with sapling trees, and the old crumbling asphalt had been paved over with puffcrete. I looked down, marveling at the alien building material. Puffcrete was colorful compared to plain concrete. The new road that slid under us was shot through with hints of pink and blue. Puffcrete was almost indestructible, and the stuff had been used all over the planet to give old roads one last permanent paveover. I knew the disintegrating roads of the past were hidden underneath that thin veneer. Here and there you could see dark patches of old asphalt, like rotten teeth, glimpsed in the back of a mouth full of crowns.
"You think we have time to go back to your place and get your personals?" Natasha asked me.
I tapped at my arm. After a moment, I shook my head. "No," I said. "Forget about my stuff and yours. I'm checking the new deployment orders on my tapper right now. They've gone out to everyone. We're to leave Earth immediately by any means possible." Realizing shore leave had come to an abrupt end, a flood of new thoughts occurred to me. I wasn't going to have time to say any goodbyes or even to lock up my place properly. I could only imagine what my parents were going through. I'd been killed on their property, and my body had been hauled away with the rest. I hoped my mom hadn't seen it, not even with a sheet pulled over my face. The sight would freak her out for life, I was sure of that. I tapped a message to my folks, letting them know I was fine and that I'd been ordered to deploy. I grimaced when I sent that one. I'd said nothing about being killed, and that seemed like a pretty big omission, even to me. My parents would figure I was in some kind of trouble and bullshitting about being deployed. The sad thing was, they might be right. We were going off-world. We were being mustered and deployed all at once, pronto. That wasn't the usual way these things happened. Normally, unless there was some kind of emergency, Legionnaires were given a summons with a few weeks to comply. Once we made it to the mustering hall, we were generally briefed, sometimes tested or trained, and only then sent into space. This time the process had been accelerated. I felt like we were moving much too fast. Suddenly Natasha pulled over.
"You drive," she said. "I want to work my tapper."
I realized that fine brain of hers had been quietly churning. I switched places with her, and I was happy to be driving through downtown traffic. It gave me something to do besides think about Turov and her plans. Natasha worked her tapper like a demon. Tech specialists were given better tapper units than the rest of us grunts, way better than civilians could buy. In addition to her tapper, she had various auxiliary devices in her kit to enhance her abilities. Fortunately, she'd brought them all in her car like a good legionnaire. Staying prepared was standard procedure for active duty personnel. We were supposed to carry around our basic kits. But in my case, as a weaponeer who specialized in big guns, I hadn't been allowed to take anything dirtside other than my uniform. She worked in relative silence. As an ex-hacker, I knew she needed to focus if she was going to dig up anything that we didn't already know.
"The vote. I think this is all about the vote," she said a few minutes later.
"Yeah?" I asked. Why would Turov care so much about the damned vote? She and that little ass-kisser Winslade spent the last hour telling me that it doesn't matter. We're all going to end up in hegemony, according to them, no matter what.
Here's what I have from our official orders, Natasha said. Her voice had changed and become officious.
She liked to line up her ducks before she knocked them down.
Tribune Drusus has ordered us all to muster out tonight and catch any transport we can to space. We'll gather aboard Minotaur tonight. Anyone who takes more than 24 hours to reach the ship will be left behind and disciplined.
We'd lost our old transport, Corvus, at Dustworld. The Legion had since arranged for a new ship named Minotaur to transport us. I hadn't gotten to see it yet, but it was rumored to be an improvement. Anyone who can't make it up in 24 hours is going to be flogged, eh? I said. Harsh. I know some guys are out climbing mountains and such like. Discipline generally didn't take the form of an actual flogging, but that technically could happen in the Legions.
I know, Natasha said. We're going to leave some people behind, and they're on the forums screaming because they already know they're screwed. But anyway, the interesting stuff on the boards and chat lines concerns tonight's vote. There's a new posting since your recommendation that they vote no, and there are a ton of views on each side.
A new posting? What's that about?
Natasha tapped at it and then hissed between her teeth. I'm not going to show you this because you're driving, but there are pictures, James. Pictures attached to your name.
I huffed. Pictures. What? Did my latest gallery of selfies get out?
No. They're pictures of the men you killed.
That changed my grin into a frown. Read the damned post.
You sure?
Read it, girl. She took in a breath and began reading.
James McGill, weapons specialist, 3rd Unit. 3 hegemony MPs were dispatched to arrest Specialist McGill in the early morning hours today. He was found in a run-down shack in the countryside of Georgia District, North America sector. Reportedly, he was met at the door armed with a large cutting instrument of some kind. Going berserk, McGill killed the 3 arresting officers but died in the process. The investigation is pending, and no reason was given for the arrest order. Drugs or other illicit behavior was hinted at by the officer who reported the incident.
As she read this aloud, I found myself hunkering over the steering wheel and gripping it more tightly with every word she spoke.
That is 100% horseshit, I told her.
Let me guess who released that message. Winslade, right?
A non-signature, but it does rank him as an adjunct.
Right, of course, I said. I should have snapped his skinny arm when I had the chance.
James,
Natasha said, putting a hand on me.
You need to calm down. I know how you feel, but this mess isn't the kind you can punch your way out of.
Okay, I said. Okay, right. But he's such a little rat bastard.
I know, let's try to think. I'm piecing this together now. Turov got herself promoted.
Sure, by taking credit for negotiating Earth's new role in the Empire. She was there, but she was trying to stop us, not help.
I know, Natasha said soothingly. But now we need to figure out what she's going to do next. She's got herself bumped up a rank and put into hegemony. Now she's trying to fold Legion Varus into hegemony with her. Maybe that was her promise to the brass, in turn for her new rank. Maybe she said she could use her influence to get us to join up willingly.
I don't care why she's doing it. I want her to fail, now more than ever. Are there any polls on the vote?
Nothing official. But it's pretty obvious she didn't like your open statement to the Legion to vote no. She wouldn't be working so hard to discredit you if she thought the vote was going the right way.
It was dark when we reached the spaceport. I narrowed my eyes suspiciously as we pulled into the parking lot. Was this place even safe? I had to think like a conniving officer to anticipate what might be coming at me next. We climbed out of the car, and Natasha swiped the go-home command on her tapper. The
The car would carefully drive itself to her place hundreds of miles north. These days, most cars could drive themselves in automatic, but riding that way made for slow, boring trips. I preferred to steer myself. We walked toward the dark hulk of the waiting lifter, which loomed nearly a mile ahead. I found myself looking around the spaceport as if I expected a gunman to show up and open fire on us. That's what it felt like, as if Earth wasn't neutral ground anymore. Even Atlanta felt like hostile territory. I told myself I was paranoid and tried to shake off the feeling. A buzzing sound made me turn and look. There was a vehicle coming toward us from the entrance. It was moving fast, too fast. I reached for my sidearm, but of course it wasn't there. Legionnaires didn't usually get to take their weaponry off base. It was alien-made and too valuable. In most districts, even a snap rifle was illegal for citizens to own. I gave Natasha a shove, spinning her around and out of the way. I stepped in the opposite direction. I figured that the driver of this small one-man machine might nail one of us, but there was no reason to let him run us both down at once. "What?" asked Natasha, who'd been tapping at her arm and not paying attention. Then she spotted the speeding vehicle and quickly stepped away in the direction I'd pushed her. It was getting dark now, and the only thing I could tell about the driver was that he was short and reckless. He aimed his odd machine in my direction. He seemed to be slowing down, but not enough. At the last second, he locked on his brakes and the vehicle went into a slide. He ended up lying it down and sliding past me as I danced to one side. Sparks came up from the fenders of the large single wheel that looped around the entire machine. I reached out a long arm as he passed and gripped the visor of his helmet. It came off with a snap and his head jerked and flopped. With the help of the nearby floodlights of the lifter, I recognized the face. The strange vehicle came to a stop, and when he climbed to his feet, I threw his helmet at him. He caught it, staggering and cursing.
"You about tore my head off," Carlos complained. "You're an angry, violent man, McGill. The net doesn't lie about that."
Carlos was a swarthy fellow built like a fireplug. He had thick limbs and a mess of dark, curly hair. He was from Chicago and had plenty of attitude to prove it. I wanted to shoot him right then, so it was probably a good thing I didn't have a weapon on me. I calmed myself with an effort of will and stepped closer to inspect his odd vehicle. "What the hell is this thing, Ortiz?" I demanded. "And why were you trying to kill me with it?"
"It's a one-seat air cycle," he said. "They're new, just out from Rigel. Fun to drive and humanoid safe, guaranteed."
"Not moron safe, unfortunately," said Natasha as she came close to glare at him.
Carlos looked from one of us to the other and threw up his hands.
"What? Aren't you guys glad to see me? I got the mustering order while I was sitting on a beach in Florida. This is the closest district spaceport, so I came up as fast as I could, and baby, this thing goes fast."
"That's great," I said. "What are you going to do with it aboard a lifter? You can't just leave it out here on the ground, not if you ever want to see it again."
Carlos grinned hugely. "That's where you're wrong. I can take it aboard the lifter."
He walked over and tapped at the controls. I could see there were colorful nodules displaying three-dimensional symbols rather than a screen. Lots of equipment that came from the Rigel area was built like that. We couldn't understand their natural language, but you could get used to their symbolic geometry-based sticks and buttons if you worked at it. To our surprise, the cycle began to contract. It folded and twisted into itself. Like a deflating balloon, it kept shrinking. The single large tire that looped around the vehicle went limp and shriveled to nothing. The central motor became a bumpy cube of metal. The seat he'd been riding in folded away as if it had been so much paper. Within a minute, the entire thing was down to a shivering mass about the size of an orange crate. Carlos picked it up, tugged at the sides, and they pulled up to form a carrying bag, complete with a shoulder strap. He heaved it onto his back and grinned at us.
"Pretty neat, huh?"
"Yes," I nodded, laughing. "That is pretty cool. Let's go up the ramp." Together, we marched up into the gloomy interior of the lifter.
The lifter wasn't crowded. In fact, it was almost empty. That was strange all by itself. Burning fuel to boost less than 100 passengers into orbit wasn't efficient. But the crew did it anyway, without even announcing the liftoff was coming. Only the warning tones and a few recorded messages warned us that heavy G-forces were imminent. Natasha, Carlos, and I all strapped in, pulling down the safety bar over our heads and slapping the chest harness buckle into place.
"This is way too familiar," Carlos said.
When I didn't react right away, he had to emphasize his point.
"You remember the first time, McGill, when we went up in one of these death traps and, in fact, died?"
"Yeah, I remember," I said. "Except I didn't die, not that time."
"You expecting some kind of thank you rubdown? 'Cause you're not getting it. Not this time. I repaid that debt."
"Shut up, Carlos," Natasha said.
He grumbled, but he did shut up. For a few minutes. Once we broke into orbit and the powerful weight of acceleration left our bodies, he perked up again.
"I got that message last night, big guy," he said. "A little love note just after midnight? The Primus must have been thrilled."
I looked at him. "What do you know about it? Why should she care so much?"
"Are you kidding me? She's a Gemini now. She figures Varus is just an embarrassment, a stepping stone from her past. She'd rather not have us do anything else dramatic now that she's out of our outfit. She has plans, baby, all the way to the top, and she doesn't care who she has to blow to get there."
Carlos had never been a tactful guy, but in this case, I figured he was dead on target.
"You think that's it? She's out of Varus, so if we screw up, she'll get the blame?" "Yeah, something like that. If we get sucked up into hegemony, it's some other guy's fault if old McGill goes hillbilly on the Narbs again."
I nodded slowly.
"What do you know about this deployment?"
"Sudden and unwanted. I'd prefer to be back on Miami Beach. This is total sugar spike bullshit."
"Yes!"
Natasha exclaimed suddenly. We glanced over at her. She was working her tapper as usual. She had a cable running from her arm into her pack, which was sitting in the seat next to her, strapped in like a toddler.
"What do you have?"
"I'm linking up," she declared, eyes shining. "I can do it."
"Yeah, so?" Carlos asked.
"That means we can still vote," she said.
We looked at her for a second. Finally, I caught on.
"You mean because we're up in space, our vote wouldn't count?"
"I say we do it right now," she said. "All three of us. If we don't, we could get disconnected again. I'm running on a thin tunneling hack right now to get a stream off this ship and down to Central."
"Could that be it?" I asked aloud.
"Could she have called this emergency deployment just to scramble the vote? Once we're up here, we're out of range."
"Yeah, maybe," Carlos said doubtfully. "But that sounds extreme."
I was tapping at my tapper. I fired off a message to every Marine on the lifter. Carlos got it right away, and he read it aloud.
"You've all been tricked. Vote now, vote fast, or you'll be silent hogs forever."
Carlos looked at me.
"Dude, you don't know that. You shouldn't spread rumors."
"It's already done," I said.
"Are they voting, Natasha?"
She worked, tapping quietly with a fixed frown on her face. She nodded after a while.
"About half of them have logged into the voting page. I'm going to have to fight to keep this tunnel open until they finish. Don't bug me."
"Excuse me, is there a stewardess on this flight?"
Carlos asked no one loudly.
"I need to move to another seat before McGill makes me dead again."
I smiled at him. "Too late," I said. "Stop fooling around and vote to keep Varus independent."
"What if I vote for unity, for strength, to join the pride and glory that's known to us lowly rodents as hegemony?"
I gave him an evil look. "If we lose, I'm going to ask that you and I serve together in a new unit under Winslay, damn you."
"Okay, okay."
Chapter 5. When we reached Minotaur and docked, Natasha quickly repeated her hack. For a brief time, everyone aboard was able to navigate on their tappers to Earth and log into Central. I walked to the promenades over the exercise decks, spreading the word. It was time to vote, now or never. I needn't have bothered because the news spread like wildfire. They didn't like the implications of the situation, and as far as I could tell, there were a lot of angry votes shunting down the line to Earth. No one liked the idea that they'd been railroaded into not voting by being mustered off Earth on the eve of the vote.
"The Loyalists are whipping the quitters 5-1, I bet," Carlos said.
"I thought you were a quitter," I answered. He looked at me in mock outrage.
"That was just my charming sense of humor. I don't want to be a hog any more than you do."
I smiled at him, but inwardly I worried about what Turov had said. She'd indicated that it didn't really matter how we voted. It was only a method to identify dissenters. I hoped she'd been bluffing about that. Outwardly, I clapped people on the shoulders and told them they were doing the right thing. I wondered about myself as I did so. Was I really into winning this vote? How much did it matter to me that we stayed independent? Sure, the dirt side hogs were losers, but at least they didn't have to look forward to getting their guts chewed on by aliens once or twice a year.
"I hope you know what you're doing, James," Natasha said later, echoing my sentiments.
She'd been eyeing me. I recognized the look. She knew me too well, and she knew when I was in over my head and bullshitting. This was definitely one of those times. I took a moment to remind myself that Turov deserved to lose this vote, even if it was only an embarrassment for her. She'd overstepped her authority, and right now she was coming off as petty despite her promotion. Defying her just for spite was a worthwhile cause in my mind. "I joined this legion to see the stars," I told Natasha, "and I mean to keep doing just that. I don't want to be gelded and left in an office someplace." She laughed.
"Don't worry. I have a feeling no one in any office could put up with you for more than an hour."
I took her statement as a compliment, thanked her, and moved off to tour the ship. Minotaur really was an improvement over Corvus. Word was it had been shipped out from the Perseus spiral arm systems from its old base about 200 light-years closer to the core. Whether this rumor was true or not, I liked the ship. It wasn't just a transport, it was a hulking warship. Minotaur had a broadside of guns, 16 of them, strung down the starboard length of her thick, scarred hull. That meant this ship could fight if she had to. Corvus had been very lightly armed and built only to take a legion of humanoids to battle. I managed to get to my bunk just before midnight. Over the last hour, every trooper I'd met had already voted. At the end, they were telling me that they couldn't get through to Central anymore, and I assured them that that was normal, even though I had no idea why the connection had been broken. Tired, I arrived at my quarters ready for bed. It had been a very long day. To my surprise, my roommate wasn't there. Instead, Centurion Graves stood in the middle of the room.
"Is there a problem, sir?" I asked, setting aside my bag.
Graves let his arm fall. He'd been watching his tapper. He stared at me coldly.
"You tell me, Specialist."
"Sir?"
"You're late."
"Just got aboard, sir. Last shuttle up from..."
"Bullshit, McGill," he snapped.
I shut up. It had always been hard to bullshit Graves. I decided to quit while I was behind.
"I've been waiting here at the barracks for the last hour or two. Then I decided to hunt you down using your tapper to locate your position. Do you know what I found?"
I was taking the grand tour, sir."
"Yes, you were. I've spoken to some of the people who were on your itinerary. Do you know what they said?"
I was standing at attention by now, having come to realize this wasn't a social call.
"I can guess, sir."
"They told me you've been out drumming up votes to keep Legion Varus independent. Is that right, Specialist?"
"In a manner of speaking, sir."
"Right. Do you know that the officers in the Legion have all been specifically forbidden to sway the votes of troops in this matter?
I glanced at him. No, sir. I wasn't aware of that.
Well, it's true. That's why I'm here.
Sir?
I want you to carry on, soldier.
Oh, I see, sir. Will do. Graves snorted.
As if you would listen to me if I told you to stop.
The vote is pretty much over with anyway, sir, I said. It's almost midnight, and they've cut our access to Central. This seemed to amuse Graves.
No, Specialist, you're wrong about that. This is far from over. Now, if you'll please excuse me, I need to get out of your presence before the crazy rubs off on me.
He bid me good night and marched off down the passageway, chuckling. After my head landed on my bunk a few minutes later, I found it was hard to keep my eyes open. The vote was over, and I was pretty sure we'd won. If we hadn't won, I figured I could at least take comfort in the fact that I'd done my damnedest. I wondered what Graves had been hinting about, but I hardly cared as long as we'd beaten Turov. The next morning after breakfast, we were summoned for a briefing. Minotaur was still in orbit, I was glad to see. I'd been worried they'd leave Earth during the night. I wanted the chance to tell my folks I was shipping out. Once we were in a warp bubble, there'd be no transmissions possible. My unit stood at attention in a square inside our designated module. Minotaur was a big enough ship to allow each unit to have its own module. They were all linked together, of course, stacked up like suitcases inside what had to be a single massive hold. But to us tiny humans, the modules were comfortable homes. There was an exercise chamber, sleeping quarters, and a mess dedicated to each. We were in the exercise chamber right now, waiting for the mass briefing to begin. Centurion Graves marched in from a side door at precisely 0700. Martial music began to play. I recognized it as the hegemony anthem. A few troopers hissed, and their veterans silenced them. A face flickered into being on the forward wall of the chamber. The image had to be 30 feet high. The face belonged to none other than Imperator Turov.
Damn, Carlos said next to me. That mole on her forehead must be a half meter across.
You should text her about it, I suggested. Turov's face was tight and grim. She waited a moment, then addressed the assembly. I knew she couldn't see us, as she had to be looking into a camera pickup, but the effect of those gigantic eyes staring down on a man was chilling nonetheless.
Fellow legionnaires,
she began, her voice rolling out over us with the booming power of an amplifier.
As many of you know, I've been transferred to hegemony. I requested this opportunity to address my Varus cohort one final time.
Carlos nudged me, his eyes shining with excitement.
We finally lost the old witch.
I slapped him away and stared at Turov in concern. She had a reason for all this, of that I was certain.
Your new mission begins today,
the giant face told us.
You'll ship out within hours, and you won't be back for a year.
A general chorus of groans went up from the assembly.
Because last night's vote was a failure,
Turov went on.
Legion Varus will not be joining hegemony. As a direct result, Central Command feels Legion Varus should be deployed immediately to Tau Ceti. There you'll serve as a color guard for the local aristocracy. The term of your contract will be, as I mentioned, one standard year.
She said these words with emphasis, and I figured she knew they would cause every soldier who heard them pain. We normally didn't deploy for more than 6 months at a time, a full year. That wasn't going to be easy. Worse, Tau Ceti was known as a dull world. They were a merchant's depot, a central clearing house for goods from 20 star systems. Most of the technology shipped to Earth these days filtered through Tau Ceti. Although Earth legions often served there as bodyguards for rich merchant princes who wanted to show off to one another, service there wouldn't be anything to write home about. Effectively, Legion Varus was being put on ice.
"Legion Varus will be relieving Legion Germanica,"
she continued.
"There will be a 2-week transferal period, after which Germanica will be brought home aboard Minotaur."
"Marooned on Tau Ceti for a year?" Carlos complained.
I didn't glance at him. No one did. Carlos was always complaining about something, but this time I had to admit he had good reason.
"I wish you all well,"
Turov concluded with a smug smile.
"And I regret that I'll be unable to accompany you on this mission. On a final note, I wanted to assure every trooper who privately texted me concerning certain irregularities in last night's voting process that the matter will be investigated thoroughly. The wheels of Legion justice grind slowly, but in the end, no wrong will go unpunished."
Carlos slapped my belly.
"She's talking about you, dummy."
I caught his hand and went for a finger hold, but he managed to jerk it away before I could break something. Veteran Harris turned his head, glaring.
"You two knock it off. Is this junior high?"
"Sorry, vet,"
Carlos said.
"McGill can't keep his hands to himself."
Shaking his head, Harris turned back around with a sigh. I was surprised he hadn't injured one or even both of us. Maybe he was too depressed to do so. When Turov's giant face finally melted away, Graves made a speech about duty and honor, but I wasn't listening. The briefing broke up shortly thereafter. All I could think of was the long, long year stretching out in front of me. We'd won the vote. Legion Varus was still independent. But it seemed like Turov had had the last laugh. She was sending us off to Tau Ceti for an entire year, a gulag assignment. After the briefing, Harris was the first to congratulate me. He clapped a heavy hand on my back. His open palm landed so hard between my shoulder blades that the blow might easily have been mistaken for a slap.
"Well played, specialist," he boomed in my ear. "Now I'll get to cool my heels 20 lights from home. I'll be wearing parade uniforms and accompanying drooling Tau while they go shopping in hostile townships. Lucky me. I'm so glad you kept us free and clear of the evils of hegemony."
I looked at him in surprise. "I didn't realize you wanted to become a hog so badly, veteran. Maybe you should appeal your case. They might let you off on a shuttle if you move fast. After all, we're still in orbit and..." Veteran Harris's hand leapt from my shoulder as if I'd bitten it. He glowered, and his eyes slid from side to side, glancing at the troops around us who were listening in.
"Shut up, McGill," he rumbled,
then quickly marched away toward the exit.
"Ha,"
Carlos said, coming up to me and staring after Harris.
"You smacked him harder than he smacked you.
What do you think? Did Harris really vote to bug out and join hegemony?"
I shook my head. "Hard to tell. If he wanted that, he could have bailed out after returning from any deployment over the years."
"Maybe it's a matter of pride," Carlos said. "He can't leave on his own because that would make him look like a coward to everyone in the Legion. But if we all bailed out together, he could do it with dignity."
I looked at Carlos and nodded. "No one will ever accuse you of being insightful, but you might just have something there." Carlos took my backhanded compliment well. He beamed and strutted. I guessed it was because for him, praise was hard to come by. Chapter 6. The only person aboard Minotaur who didn't seem depressed was Natasha. She was excited to have the chance to visit Tau Ceti, which she referred to by its nickname, T. tech world.
It's a techie dream, she told me. They have stuff there you just can't get on Earth.
Isn't it some sort of space station, a merchant clearinghouse in orbit? I asked, making conversation.
Yes, there is the orbital market. That's all most people know about the world. But there's much more to the system than that.
We were in line at the cafeteria, and I plucked an orange from a fake tree and rubbed it on my uniform. It was an old habit, one I continued to indulge, even though I knew there wasn't a speck of dirt left on fruit aboard a Legion ship.
That's an example right there,
she said, pointing to the tree I'd just relieved of its fruit.
These trees in the cafeterias are new tech marvels from Tau Ceti. Have you ever wondered how a spindly tree like that can grow fresh fruit every night?
This thing cost hard galactic credits? I asked, looking at the tree in surprise. I figured the fruit was glued on there by the staff to make it more appealing. You're saying it actually grows like this?
Every night,
Natasha said, plucking one of her own.
See the leaves? They're real. This tree can grow anything we want. If we load it with a new DNA sequence, it can grow new fruit fast.
Huh, I said. Food has been better on this trip. I marveled briefly, then carried my tray to a table and sat down. Natasha trailed behind and sat opposite me. She seemed to be almost in a trance, as if her mind was working overtime.
The possibilities, she said. There's so much tech out there, James. It's mind-boggling. We've lived on Earth all our lives, while the vast galaxy has been just beyond our reach, wheeling around us and creating new products we've never even heard of.
She proceeded to talk about tech miracles she'd heard whispers about, but which she'd never yet seen. The gusher of money that had reached Earth had doubled the number of consumer and government products from alien systems, but rather than satisfying her, a glimpse of the true economy of the galactics had served to inflame her desire for more. I went to work on lunch, shoveling and chewing. For me, eating is a pretty serious business. She'd barely touched her meal by the time I'd reached the halfway mark on my plate, and I have to admit I was eyeing her portion and wondering if she was going to need help with it.
Tau Ceti isn't like anywhere you've ever been, she went on. It's more advanced than Earth in every way. The Tau have completely covered their planet with a single gigantic city. Even the oceans are crisscrossed with bridges and artificial islands. But that's only the half of it. Most of their world is hidden from the sky. It's an old world, and they never stopped increasing their population. They've been restricted from colonizing other systems like all frontier worlds, but they've become an impressive power anyway.
You going to eat that orange? I asked, unable to keep my true thoughts to myself any longer. She tossed it to me and showed me a wry twist of her mouth. I have to admit this is fresh tasting, I said, peeling the fruit and popping pieces of the orange into my mouth in rapid succession. By the time she was done talking about alien tech, I was leaning back and sighing. I'd eaten half her ration and all of mine. For me, that was the very definition of satisfaction. Eating with a girl often resulted in windfalls like that, one of the reasons I did it so often. Natasha leaned forward and whispered to me.
You want to know what I'm going to do when we get to Gelt Station?
She asked. I narrowed my eyes.
Something that you want to whisper about?
She shrugged.
Nothing illegal. Not exactly. I want to walk the markets and find something no one has ever seen on Earth. I'm going to buy it and take it home with me when our tour is done.
Why? She made an exasperated sound.
To show it off, of course. I can tell already you're not going to be impressed.
Depends on what it is, I said. For instance, if you can score me a tree that pours out bourbon, or... I don't know.
That's it? Your imagination ends with a daily booze producer?
Well, you'd have to admit that would be pretty cool in my little house.
What else would you like to find?
I looked at her and smiled in a predatory fashion. How about a unique alien stimulation device? Something no one on Earth has experienced. She looked at me in disgust and crossed her arms.
That's not what I meant, James.
Training in 5, I said, getting up. All around us, soldiers were stirring and putting on their kits. Out in the passageway, she turned to the left and I had to go to the right. Techs and weaponeers didn't often train together. I reached out and caught her hand. She turned and kissed me. We traded smiles and parted company.
Still nailing that one, huh?
Carlos asked, falling into step beside me.
Losing your touch, aren't you? I mean, shouldn't you be chasing some fresh tail by now?
She's a good friend. Carlos walked backwards for a half dozen steps, making guttural sounds.
Yeah, I can understand the attraction better as she walks away. Tasty.
I tripped him without even breaking my stride. It wasn't hard since he was walking backward. He sprawled, then bounced back up.
Asshole, he muttered.
Have you heard anything about our unit's assignment?
Not really. We're all breaking up, I know that much.
We're spreading all over Gelt Station playing soldier for any tax cheat, payroll courier, or merchant princess who wants a color guard.
I have to admit, it does sound a little dull. But I'm looking forward to a vacation from serious combat missions. Isn't it about time we got a cush assignment?
Yeah, maybe, Carlos admitted. We can't always play hero on some primitive dirt ball of a planet, I guess. It just seems wrong for Legion Varus, you know what I mean?
Looking down at him, I frowned and nodded. You've got a point there. As I see it, there are two possible reasons for this assignment. Either Turov just wants to put us on ice out here so we can't embarrass her further, or...
Or what?
Or there's more going on out there than we've been told about. Maybe there's a reason why they're retiring Germanica from this world and putting in the Goon Squad instead.
Ha, the Goon Squad. Yeah, that's about what we are, isn't it?
We reached the exercise room, took up live weapons, and slouched against the wall. Above and ahead, we could see space. It was vivid, but fake. I knew there was only a titanium wall there, no stars, no swirling planets or nebulae. When a warp ship was inside its bubble, sliding between the stars at amazing speeds, it was impossible to see light in a normal way. An actual window to the bubble field outside would only show a glowing white haze. But as it comforted the occupants, human ships tended to display portals and even large panoramic views of what the passing universe should look like, if it were physically possible to see it.
What's on the menu today? Carlos asked me.
Another squad of recruits, I said, shouldering my belcher, a heavy plasma cannon.
You don't sound so happy about it. You scared?
I glanced at him and gave him a disgusted look. This kind of training had always delighted Carlos and disturbed me. My only fear is that you'll shoot me in the ass somehow, I said.
Carlos belly laughed. That's more likely than getting hit by the noobs.
The exercise room began to warp and dim. I knew that was our cue. Carlos and I jogged forward and selected a position behind a rock that had grown up out of the floor over the last 30 seconds. It was solid enough, even though it was just a pack of smart metal with pixelated texture projected over it. Veteran Harris's voice crackled into my ear as I adjusted my helmet and the built-in headset.
All right, ambushes. The recruits are entering the passage to the west in 1 minute. No one is to fire until they are all in the room, armed and on alert. Is that clear? No pasting them early this time.
I heaved a sigh. The exercise room was about 200 meters square, but it seemed bigger because of all the illusory scenery on the walls. Trees, rocks, even tall grasses that rippled in a non-existent wind, now surrounded the fire team I was hiding with. Including veteran Harris himself, there were only 6 of us, against 30 recruits. But this wasn't going to be a fair fight.
The noobs came in, armed themselves with snap rifles from a rack, and were told to patrol the far side of the exercise area. The adjunct leading the group was a thin female with big eyes and a small, mean mouth. She ordered them forward but didn't step into the room herself. As an experienced soldier in Legion Varus, I could have told these poor bastards to keep their eyes on their own officer for clues. Whatever she did or didn't do could be critical to their odds of survival.
"Hold your fire, troops," Harris said in my earpiece. "Let the babies march in close. We want to scare them good."
Scare them? That was a laugh. We were going to tear them apart. For the first time, my mood shifted. I watched as the confused recruits walked forward. They looked around warily, but without proper appreciation for the danger they were in. It didn't seem right that they should be blasted without warning. I reached up and cranked the aperture on my own weapon down to a tight beam. An instant later, Carlos slapped a gauntlet on my shoulder.
"Are you going to screw me?"
he asked quietly, his helmet uncomfortably close to mine.
"Take your position, trooper," I said. "This is going to be a real fight."
"Shit, McGill. Shit!"
Carlos broke off and belly-crawled away from my position. I almost chuckled. There was one man who knew me well. Sighting carefully with my cannon balanced on the back of a fake rock, I targeted the approaching platoon. I was supposed to start this with a wide-angle blast that would engulf the front troops in a cone of hot plasma. Ambushing them and taking out half their number in the opening volley was part of the procedure. Instead, I aimed through them to the very back rank. There, slinking along with her pistol drawn and looking very tense, was the thin adjunct. She knew the score, of course. She was leading her platoon into an ambush to teach them a lesson.
"McGill leads," Harris said. "Fire when ready, weaponeer."
I couldn't get a clear shot. The hapless recruits were all over, bunching up, not even keeping their distance from one another. I watched as they jostled one another, laughing. I had to admit these pups needed a little training. I felt sure they were going to get it before this was over.
"McGill,"
Harris said a second later.
"Fireman."
It was like threading a needle with a fire hose. I nudged my weapon right, then left. Damn, that adjunct was a skinny little thing. It was almost as if she knew what was coming. Finally, I got my clear shot, and I took it instantly. A gush of brilliant energy leapt across the short distance between our converging lines. It lanced between several startled recruits and caught the adjunct full in the upper body. Her head was completely gone, and most of her narrow shoulders were burned away with it. My dad used to talk about how chickens ran around the yard after you cut their heads off. That didn't happen in this case. The adjunct flopped down stone dead. But the rest of her platoon certainly did remind me of frightened fowl as they scrambled for cover, screaming and shouting to one another. All around me, my dastardly comrades sighted but held their fire, waiting for the order. We had heavy armor, experience, and surprise on our side, but there were only six of us against 30.
"What kind of a chicken shit shot was that?" Harris demanded. "Take out that front line before they disperse."
I set my plasma cannon aside and released the heating coil, letting it drop out onto the camouflage deck, steaming. It sizzled there and sent up a tendril of gray smoke.
"Weaponeer reporting weapon failure," I said calmly. "Repeat, Weaponeer McGill reporting..."
"Damn you, McGill," Harris roared. "You think you're funny. The rest of you fire at will. Tear them up."
A hail of fire erupted from both sides almost simultaneously. The recruits had gotten over their stunned status and were back in the fight. Their commander was down, but they were past their initial shock, and they responded by getting low and crawling toward us. The metallic trees around us were splattered with countless rounds. I returned fire with my secondary weapon, taking out two before I was hit multiple times and forced to retreat.
I don't like to die any more than the next guy. Really, I don't. My heavily armored team was pushed back. We couldn't be taken out with a single snap rifle pellet, but there were thousands rattling against the skin of our suits now. If they hammered one spot several times in a row, they could penetrate and kill even a heavy. We retreated until our backs were against the far wall. Three heavies were down by that time, including Carlos. I was breathing hard. This wasn't looking good. We'd taken down at least half the recruits, but the rest had blood in their eyes. They were angry, semi-organized, and pushing hard. A massive clang sounded, and I thought I'd bought the farm. But it was only Harris smashing his gauntlet onto the top of my helmet.
"I should shoot you myself," he roared.
"We have to pull out to the north wall, vet," I said. "There's a pile of rocks to hide in over there." Harris had a crazy look in his eye.
"I'm going to do it," he said, putting his gun to my head. "I'm going to finish you off."
"Your odds of survival will be much better if we cover each other's retreat to those rocks, veteran." Harris roared in frustration, and he ran for the rocks. I covered his retreat by lancing a recruit who'd crawled too close with a hot poke from my soup blades. Then I fell back while Harris's gun beamed down my pursuers. In the end, we reached the rock pile, holed up, and let the enemy patrol pass to victory. For the first time in Legion Varus history, the recruits had won the ambush scenario. Chapter 7. It wasn't my first dressing down, and I knew it probably wouldn't be my last. I'd been summoned to Centurion Graves' office about an hour after the vicious firefight in the exercise room had ended in a loss for my team. I wasn't under any illusions about what was in store for me when I reported to my commander. Normally, Harris would have given me a nasty grin when he saw me show up on a day like this, but he was too pissed off to enjoy the situation. He glared at me, and I knew he'd as soon put a round between my eyes as spit on me. Graves saluted us as we stepped into his office, but he didn't tell us to stand at ease. We remained rigid and staring while he eyed us both. Finally, he heaved a sigh.
"McGill," he said, "I'm sorry to say that Veteran Harris has requested a formal reprimand for your conduct earlier today. I've already heard his side of the story. Please relate yours as concisely as possible."
"Sir," I began, "at 0800 hours today, I joined Harris's team of heavies in the exercise room. We planned to stage a mock ambush on an unsuspecting platoon of lightly armed recruits. Unfortunately, my weapon didn't operate as I'd..."
"Bullshit, McGill," Harris interrupted with sudden vehemence. "Don't you even dare go there. We're not a pair of desk-flying noobs, you know. We've seen your act plenty of times before, and..." "Harris, please,"
Graves interrupted.
"Okay," Harris said. "Okay. I only wanted to point out the obvious, that McGill is full of grade A shit, sir."
After that, Harris clamped his mouth shut. I could tell it wasn't an easy thing for him to do.
"McGill," Graves said, "I have to agree with Harris's assessment in this instance. I'm not buying any nonsense about the status of your weapon. It operated perfectly before and after the exercise, just not while it was in your hands."
"Well, sir, in that case, I'd like to point out the general rule followed by heavy weaponeers in combat. The commanders give the orders, but we're in charge of executing the technical details to the best of our ability and at our discretion. My actions were due to a personal judgment call. While I can understand how someone could see my decisions as flawed, I believe the end results were positive."
"You didn't follow orders," Harris exploded. "You know damn well."
Graves waved him to silence again.
"McGill, half the heavy troopers lying in ambush were killed by the enemy patrol during the exercise. More importantly, The recruits made it to the far wall, achieving their goal and a clear victory in the game. How can these results be looked upon as positive?
It's true, sir, that my side failed to stop the enemy in the exercise, but that's only one way of looking at it. The real purpose of the mission was to train troops and to shape them into battle-hardened fighters before their first real battle. I believe my approach managed to do just that.
Graves frowned slightly.
Could you elaborate?
The enemy light troop officer in this mock firefight played her role poorly. She knew what was going to happen. She didn't spread out her men or give them any orders that would improve their odds. Instead, she hung back and offered them no guidance. If she'd led her team to the best of her ability, we might have lost the exercise fair and square.
Harris lost his cool once again.
That's the whole damn point. The recruits are supposed to lose. They're supposed to be slaughtered. It's a good hard lesson for them, and puts the fear of live rounds into them before they wander out onto an alien battlefield. Are you trying to outthink Legion Varus's training techniques? Is that it? Do you know better than your officers?
Hold on, Harris, Graves said. McGill, explain yourself.
I don't think the exercise is well designed. If the purpose is to train both sides, then my alteration of the script achieved that goal. In fact, I think both sides gained from the action today. The surviving recruits got a morale boost out of it. I even provided their commanding officer with a little education. Next time she might take the exercise seriously, rather than hanging back and letting her troops march into slaughter. Maybe she'll try to win and stay alive in the process.
Harris sputtered and scoffed, but no intelligible words came out of him. Graves looked at me, frowning and thinking hard. Finally, he spoke again.
McGill, Veteran Harris was your commander in this exercise. You owed it to him to follow his orders. Regardless of your complaints about the opposing officer, Veteran Harris had the superior strategy. You ignored his orders, and your side did poorly as a result. Since this combat wasn't with an actual enemy, your mistake doesn't warrant a demotion or other punishment. I'll keep it out of your permanent record, but it will cost you big time all the same.
Yes, sir, I said. Cost me what?
McGill, I regret to inform you that I'm removing you from the promotion roster. Up until today, you were on my short list for the rank of veteran.
Say what?
Demanded Harris, flabbergasted. Graves stared at him coldly until he quieted.
That's right, Graves continued. I'm going to have to rescind my recommendation. This prank has cost you rank. Do you understand me, Specialist?
I felt a wave of shock. Veteran? Me? Such rapid advancement was highly unusual. In most cases, even a stellar trooper had to work his way through his first enlistment and be accepted for a second active duty stint before he had a chance of achieving advanced rank. Learning that I'd been considered for rank and lost my chance came as a stunner to me. Graves was still eyeing me, and I realized he expected a response.
Yes, sir, I said. Right. I understand, sir.
Good.
My face was a flat mask. Internally, I didn't know what to think. Should I argue? Had I been a fool to go off script in the first place? Did I even want to be a veteran? I wasn't sure how to answer any of these questions, which were popping off in my head.
Centurion, Veteran Harris said, leaning forward. I'd like to request a private word with you after this. Would that be possible?
Request denied. Graves responded immediately. I already know what you're going to say, Harris.
Sir, I just can't understand how you could...
Veteran,
Graves said, cutting him off.
You've made your point. Your report has been taken into account and considered carefully. Specialist McGill has been reprimanded and materially punished. I think you should take that at face value and leave it alone.
Yes, sir.
You're both dismissed.
Harris and I walked out of the Centurion's office together. I was in a daze, and I think Harris was, too. Harris turned to me with a savage look on his face.
I want